Welcome to French Renault Diaries Uncensored, Bants and Rants. The shorter episodes, in between the chunkier ones we've actually put some thought into, where we get everything off our chests. Will you learn anything?
Probably.
Yes.
Will you laugh?
Possibly.
Will we?
Without a doubt.
In this episode, a big mud hut adventure. Rosie becomes the client for a week. Should artisans be allowed to enjoy holidays and other pleasures in life? And stepping into our riot women shoes and sticking up for the trades. It's almost like profit is a dirty word. You're not allowed to make a profit on a job and then go on a holiday.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, so what do you do for a living? And how do you earn your money?
Yeah, exactly.
It's our livelihood. I'm Sue.
I'm Rosie.
I'm Michaela.
Let's get to it.
Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Had a good week?
Yeah.
Yeah, fab.
Yeah, yeah. Fabulous. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's the result.
Yeah. On a personal note, I suppose, it's not really renovating in France, but I suppose you could class it possibly as renovating. So a friend and I have just booked our flights to go and volunteer at the Nasio Trust in Kenya.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And part of that is building houses for the people. I say houses, I use that as a loose term. It's the mud huts, basically, but building them so we get
dwellings.
Yeah, so one of the things that we are going to do is definitely help out with building the mud huts. So it is basically mud, dung and a bit of whatever else slapped onto a wooden structure.
Wow.
So and it gives
that sounds
yeah,
amazing
gives them a nice clean mud hut rather than one that's leaking.
How long are you there for, Sue?
We're there with the Nasio Trust for 10 days, and then we're going to spend a couple of days in Nairobi. But it's a UK charity.
So what an amazing experience. How did you get onto it? How did
well,
it come to pass?
We've got a friend here who's got a second home in France, and she works for a UK charity, and she works for the Nasio Trust, and she's spoken about it. And she kind of said on a night out, oh, why don't you girls come and do a thing? You know, like you do when you've been out and you've had a few. And everybody's kind of like, yeah. But myself and a friend were kind of like, actually, do you know what? I've just had a milestone birthday this year. She's got a big milestone birthday coming up in March next year. You get to an age where you think, I really want to do something different, give a little back.
Absolutely.
And she says, why don't you come? So we just looked into it and we were like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. So we booked the flights on Wednesday and we're going in March, so we're going to try and fundraise some money as well. So, yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Well, you'll have to let us know
the link where we
can
send you some money and help you out. Definitely, it's for a good cause.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe we'll put it on the bottom of this podcast so people can click onto it and they can show their support
for
you, because it's an amazing thing.
Fantastic. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
And it's so nice to be doing something like out of the realms of everyday, like trying to deal with the other things that we have going on in the trades.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, we've had, like we all have, we've had a really tough year this year. And anybody listening that's got a business in France will know how difficult it is to run. I mean, obviously in BTP as well, especially with everything that goes on with it, there's a lot of obstacles that you have to overcome all the time. You feel like you're trudging through mud all the time. So this has given me a little bit of a bit of a motivation as well, which then kind of spreads through all your life, doesn't it? And every aspect.
Well, not only that, Sue, but it's a bit of respite from the humdrum of what we have to do every day, every week, every month.
Absolutely.
But also, it's a renewed appreciation of what we have here as well, isn't it? To go to somewhere like Nairobi, and as you say, you're helping them build, you know, kind of mud huts. I mean,
I'll probably come back and think what I've been moaning about, or the stuff that is quite significant actually that we've had to go through as a business this year. I'm hoping maybe I'll come back and think, you know what, none of that really matters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What matters is we've got a nice house, we've got food on the table, and we're healthy. I mean, what more can you want in life? I mean, lots of things, obviously.
Well,
but
yeah, that's true. a more simplified view of the world is what we all need, I think, at the moment, with everything that's going on. It feels like battles are just coming at us every single day, like work, personal, financial. It's just, it is a very hard time to be living at the moment for a lot of people. And you tend to feel, why is this happening to me? When you're going to see people in a different country and what struggles they have, which will really bring to light, actually, you know, we do have struggles. It's not to diminish those, but not as much as some other people.
Yeah,
I mean,
the one thing that stood out for me is when our friend told, she's been over and she took her teenage sons over to help, just to give them a bit of a, you know, you're very lucky in the UK, you've got a car, you've got a lovely house, just to open their eyes a little bit into what's going on. And it was a picture that they put on, and she said, it's true, the little kids there, some of them don't even have shoes, and they walked 5 miles to school, and they've got little smiles on their faces. Mm. And you know what I mean? It's probably real hardships we probably couldn't imagine.
It makes you wonder, what are the things that bring you happiness in life? Because, yeah, they've got to walk to school barefoot, but they're still smiling.
But also,
it makes you wonder if we make things more complicated for ourselves.
Yeah, because we see it as a hardship for them, but it's not a hardship because that's their reality. All right, if we had to walk to work with no shoes on our feet, then it would be, to us, it's a hardship. So we view the same thing in another country as a hardship when the reality is it's not.
I mean, yeah, there's me moaning because my staircase isn't finished and I'm going to be going out there building them a mud hut with mud floor, and they're going to be absolutely ecstatic because it's going to be dry.
I've had a bit of a, well, last week we had a bit of a week with a plumber that came round to our house that we've worked with him before, but he sent his, the plumber that we use, he has done his back in and he had an operation. So he sent his kind of second round, his workmate. And it was just a nightmare with him. He didn't seem like he knew what he was doing half the time. He turned up. I mean, I became the client. And it wasn't a nice, like, place to be with this artisan who came round. He was French and he was really difficult to deal with. And going back to that, it was all about, like, how unfair this is. Why is he doing this to us? And I did have a week like that with him. But now, like, stepping back, when it's all over, actually, it's done in the end. We got there. It was a little bit of a battle with him. But luckily, everything's working that he did. He installed two radiators. He got the heating working eventually. Had to come back a few times to redo it. But we're there. And now it's like, okay. And when you say this about going to Nairobi, Kenya, it was nothing in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. You became the client then. So you got the other...
Become the client.
You got the frustrations of the client. Of the client.
Yeah. I know. And it's not very often that we do that, just because, like, we're in the trade, so we know how to do a lot of stuff ourselves.
I don't know what John's like, but I know Scott won't have anybody here. He won't employ anybody to work on our house. Only the electrician.
I mean, you must get this. You almost have to make the choice. Do you go on site and work for your client who wants you to be there all the time? Or do you take the time off and work on your own house? And we were kind of in the thinking that we could probably go and work for a client, push the job on, and probably earn the money on site rather than John being at home doing it. But he has been, like, fitting a kitchen for us as well, so he has been doing some work at home. But yeah, they're the complexities of having a business, I suppose. Sometimes you don't know whether you're just better off going working for someone else and paying someone to come to your home and do it for you. But I can understand Scott's dilemma, because you become a micromanager, I think. It's really difficult not to, like, everything that you've experienced and what you're demanded of from the clients that you have. When an artisan comes into your house, you start going, well, we'd never do that. And we'd never show up late. And we'd never, you know.
You start benchmarking your own standards. Yeah, you benchmark your own standards.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And interestingly, somebody kind of coined a phrase to us last year. We've had the roof done, we've had our man cave roof done, we've had new gates put, welded, and somebody just round the corner from us went, oh, well, you're doing all right then, if you can afford to pay other trades to come in and do your renovation. And we kind of thought, well, Paul's out working. He's not the greatest at certain elements of DIY and renovation, so it enables us to kind of go out to earn the money so that we can give direction to someone to say, can you do this? Because A, we're busy, and B, I always kind of think of it as keeping other trades used in the area.
Yeah,
you're supporting the local economy. And that's the way I look at it.
Do you know what? On Facebook, people will say, if somebody says about a price, this really gets my goat. They think you're driving around in Porsches. And it's almost like profit is a dirty word. You're not allowed to make a profit on a job and then go on a holiday.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, so what do you do for a living? And how do you earn your money?
Yeah, exactly.
It's our livelihood. Why?
I mean, some builders in the UK do drive Porsches.
Well, yeah, depending on what they're doing. But
the whole purpose of running a business is to make profit. It's to pay for all of the things that we have to pay for, like the accountants, the uber costly cotizations, the upkeep of your van on the road, the workwear, the tools. For some of you, you've got to pay subcontractors. So where do they think that money's going to be coming from?
I think they think you're a charity and you should be.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Like the comment, oh, you're doing it right, then if you can have a new roof. Yeah, you've worked your bloody arse off to pay for it.
The thing that I think is we should spin that, because if we're doing really well, yes, as a business, then good for the client, because we're dependable, we're sustainable, we're doing all the right things, we've not had any insurance claims. You know, take that as like a positive, client, please, because if we weren't doing very well, why would you hire us? If we were coming like rocking up at your house in a beaten up old minivan with hardly any tools and getting out like you just got out of bed, is that what you prefer? Because it seems when we've not got a lot of money.
I've got a story. When we first arrived, there's an old retired guy, been here a long time, and he said to Scott, this was his advice, drive around in an old crappy van and they'll feel sorry for you and want to employ you. And Scott's a bit like, no, that's not how we work. That's not how we work.
That's rubbish. Well, also imagine people will think that they'll feel sorry for you, but they'll be like, oh, I can get a really good deal with this person. Yeah. Yeah. Because they're so desperate.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to pay what they ask me. I'll like go 50% less or something and see if they'll accept it. And then you get all that hassle.
That was the advice. I just thought, oh, that's so
really bad advice.
It was an old electrician.
And who was that? Who gave that advice?
He's in his 80s now. So he'd been here a long, probably came in the early 90s. Late 80s, early 90s. So maybe in rural France, that's how it was back in the day. If you rocked up at a French person's house, like, oh, look.
There is something to be said about like the judgment, I think there is in France. I think a lot of people don't drive Porsches around and Range Rovers like we do in the UK, because there is a certain like judgment on people. And it reminds me of a story that an estate agent told me about recently. And they work for quite a well-known estate agent. I won't mention any names. But she said that the owner of this estate agency, which is French, bought a brand new Porsche. And then he bought a Twingo so he could drive to work in the Twingo. And he just keeps the Porsche in the garage. So he drives through our town in a Twingo so no one will judge him. And then probably at the weekend goes to, I don't know, the coast in his Porsche.
Wow.
When no one knows him. I don't know. But yeah, that's
well,
that's
there we go
thing.
Then.
Yeah. And this my husband, who I can't tear away from his trusted tranny that he's had for the best part of 15, 16 years.
Yeah, we are.
I hope we're talking about a van here, are we? Just to clarify the situation
about
again.
A Ford Transit van, yeah. And that gets cleaned probably twice a year. And we're coming up for that muddy, dirty time of year where I know the van will come home and then somebody would have inscribed in with their finger, clean me or prop for dirty. So, yeah, always brings a smile to our face.
I'm going to go off at a tangent here, but I thought it was a really nice one. Considering we're all women doing a podcast and we're in the trades, and it's sometimes like the misogyny does sprinkle through a little bit. I've just been watching Riot Women on the BBC. Have you watched it yet?
No.
You should watch it.
Yeah, somebody told me to watch it.
Amazing. Amazing. I think it's a new wave in women standing up for themselves, 50 plus, and it's being, you know, justified by the BBC and shown in a really a really great light, and I just thought it was brilliant. I am definitely going to channel my riot woman, my yeah. inner riot.
We know you
woman,
are, Rosie. We know
from now on. Yeah, it's not that well hidden. Yeah, but I'm going to really let her out now. Now we hit 50.
There's always a time and a place for things, there is. Isn't there? The things happen. You know, as we see on Facebook from one week to the next, there are always certain things that us three could be triggered at any one point and think, "Whoa!" But there's, yeah, like you've said with Riot Women, there's a time and a place. And I think, as you said earlier on, Sue, tide is turning.
Yeah, don't mess with a menopausal woman. That's all I can say. Because 20 years ago, I would have just kept my mouth shut. And even if I know what I'm saying is factual, I'd have just not bothered. And Scott's a bit like, "Oh, why'd you bother?" I says, "Because if people don't stand up for it, nothing changes."
Mm.
And there's so much misinformation. We've both seen it, haven't we, over the years, misinformation on Facebook forums and things like that, that it's about time people stood up and said, "Actually, no, this is not right." And trade, sticking up for the trade as well.
Yes, yes. Very important.
Because they just seem to not want to, or there's certain groups where they're not want to, or they just don't care. Or
well, Facebook's quite a scary place sometimes, isn't it? Because people do tend to just say what they want to say. With no consequences. And I think, you know, invariably, I don't want to have a moan because, you know, we're all very competent ladies and we can all stand up for ourselves. But I do think sometimes, you know, men do kind of judge us when we go on these forums and give our advice on them, as in, like, what do you know?
Yeah, there was a bit of that. There's been a bit of that.
So I just thought maybe, you know, we can grab hold of this wave that's happening at the moment where women are being taken more seriously, you know.
Yeah.
It's an evolution. Yeah. I mean, I hope it continues.
We're in a male-dominated industry, aren't we?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I was discussing this with Katie a little bit, our producer, just before we got on, and we were perhaps discussing that we should have some tradie ladies who actually do work on site on this podcast at some time.
Definitely.
So
yeah.
I think that'd be a really nice thing to showcase.
So if there's any tradie ladies out there, get in touch.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Please get in touch. We'd like to hear from you.
Definitely, yeah.
I mean, I love taking a day out with hubby because at home it's very much, you know, I rule the roost kind of thing. You know, it's cooking, the cleaning, the ironing, you know, the whole shebang of keep that keeps the house moving. So Paul kind of goes, "Right, okay, tell me what to do and I'll do it." But I love going out on site with him because all of a sudden I become his electrician's mate, and then he's the one guiding me. "Can you get this? Can you do that? Can you do this?" And one of the things that I always find quite funny, and I don't know how your tradie husbands are, but he always manages to eat his lunch by about 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And one year I was out with him. We was digging a trench and we were laying this like 150 metres of red game with some heavy cable coming through it. And I just thought at 10:30, I went, "Oh, can we stop and have a cup of tea?" I said, "I'm really, really, really hungry." So I'm...
You appreciated where he was. So, yeah. Yeah, John's the same. If it's past midday, it's just like it's too late for him to eat almost.
Do you know what? I don't know how the French trades
exactly
go and have their big lunch and then go and work after.
No
after.
Idea.
Scott can't do it. He has to have a sandwich, a light lunch, and then because there's no way he could go to a restaurant, have his 3-course meal or whatever it is.
A menu du jour.
And then go to work. You don't want to go and have a lie down on the sofa.
And also they have a bit of wine. I mean, let's be honest. Most French people at lunchtime have a bit of wine. Yeah, you do feel like you need to lie down after that. Just even me working in the office, if I went out for a 3-course lunch, I'd want to like get under my desk and have a bit of a snooze.
Don't you find though that the 2 o'clock, 2 till 3, it's like the graveyard shift anyway. When you've been up and at it for 5 or 6 hours, by that time, mentally, you're feeling tired, not just your stomach full and feeling tired, but your energy levels are much, much lower. So I don't know about you, but I like to have a little 2 o'clock snooze or a meditation just to kind of renew that energy and then get back on it again.
Oh, nice. Well, I might have to try that, Michaela. That's a really nice tip. Anything else that's happened this week? Personal, professional?
Actually, wasn't there a post saying on Facebook recently saying, I've just had a quote through and my, I think it might have been a plumber, said, it doesn't need Decinel insurance. He told me, I can't remember if it was a plumber. I'll have to look back at it. But anyway, it was an artisan that should, and they told the client, no, I don't need it.
Oh.
And she was double checking on Facebook, and everybody obviously said, yeah, double check it.
No, neither did I. Yeah. I saw the one during the week.
Expat in France. It wasn't on the renovating ones. It was on one of the generic
Because there was one on the renovating in France about a person who had a local plumber that they'd used, they'd liked. But then he had provided a quote for a boiler heating system. And then somebody, I scrolled down and went, somebody said, well, can't you ask him to, if you could supply the part? And you kind of thought, how do you insure just labour? Why should a trade, you know, given the 10-year Decinel, the 2-year manufacturer warranty, why should a homeowner kind of go, yeah, there you go, I've got it for you. So when that goes wrong within 2 years, who picks up the...
But this is what I don't understand about this. I read that and I was kind of thinking, right, so you've got the plumber. If he's got a reputable supplier, he goes to his supplier. He gets a trade discount. I saw someone on there had written, trade discounts don't really exist in France. Well, they don't for DIYers, that's true. But if you've got a good relationship with your supplier, then we do get trade discounts, we have to admit. But that also covers all the things that you've just said, Michaela, like picking it up, going organizing it, doing the emails, phoning the company, making sure you've got the right one, making sure it arrives on the date that you need it. So that's covered. So you've got the discount, but some of that is eaten up by all the services that are included in that the client doesn't have to do themselves, like you say. But then if the plumber's buying it at 20% from the supplier, they're only charging the client 10% if they're installing it. So surely the clients are only paying 10% TVA as well.
I think.
Am I correct?
Yeah.
They're not going to pay the 20%. If they went to the shop themselves, they pay 20%.
Yeah.
If they get it off the plumber, I think they're paying
10%. I think the point of it was, is they said the boiler was 1,400. So they say was 14. They could have bought it for 1,400 euros cheaper. I don't believe it, but it could be.
I would like to see that quote and see if the plumber divide every single like bit of, you know, kit that he needs to supply it, plus the picking it up. And I mean, where are they in France? Are they in the middle of nowhere where it's an hour to get to that supplier? There's a lot of things that could be included if it is 1,400 euros more expensive and none of those things are included. That's wrong. But I would like to see the quote to make that judgment. And I think what's difficult in that scenario is it's put on like a scandal.
Yes.
And everyone reacts to it. And it's like, oh my God, that's so bad. Why don't you just buy it yourself? You know, the background history hasn't been divulged and it's not always as black and white as that, as we know. So.
Also, I'm going to say this. As BTP people, yes, we do make a profit and we do mark up materials. I'm going to say it because that is most of your profit margin as well. That's how you boost your profit margin. Any business in the world does exactly the same. Why do these people on these forums, homeowners, think that it's that you're scamming them if you're making a markup on the product?
Every other company is making a profit
in
a business. Why can't trades?
We make a profit every year. I damn well make sure we make a profit every year. I look at all of our jobs for profitability because not all of them are the same. Some jobs aren't, which enables us to kind of go, when we get inquiries, no, don't want that one. Here's somebody else that can do that, so that we can focus on delivering competence, trust, professionalism on the jobs that we want to take on, that are going to provide profitability, so that at the end of the year, when we look at the, dare I say it, 50,000 euros worth of business costs before we've even paid our mortgage and all of the other household stuff, then at least I know when I go to sleep at night, the business is paid for. nobody's going to be coming knocking on my door to say, oh, what about this? What about that? What about the other? I know that we can confidently end one year and go into another year thinking, yeah, and we can have turkey for Christmas.
Maybe some prawns.
Yes.
Bit of smoked salmon.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. So no.
But not together.
You know, the purpose of running a business is to be profitable. That you shouldn't be looking at the end of the year going, shit, I haven't enough to put by for a rainy day.
Well, that's just silly. I don't know why anyone would wish that for us. I mean, again, it goes back to the point, like, you know, we turn up and we're professionals. We have to have profit to be able to be professional, to pay all our wages, to have a decent, you know, level of living.
Yes.
And then that yep. filters down to the client. That filters down to the client. We can turn up on time. We aren't, like, you know, completely chaotic. We aren't disappearing because our van's broken down, because we can afford to get it fixed as soon as possible, or we've got another backup. You know, we've paid for all these things because our businesses are profitable. So we're sustainable.
Yeah.
It's about being visionary and evolutionary, and being able to be visionary and evolutionary rather than reactionary on a day-to-day basis, because the smallest of dramas can knock your work week off kilter. But if you've, as you've just rightly said, Rosie, if you've planned for those scenarios in, then you can respond to them, and then the client need know nothing about them. You know, you safeguard your client from the dramas behind your business door, because they don't need to know that.
I don't know about you guys. I think we've touched on a lot today in our rants and bants. And I think we've just generated about 500 podcasts from our rants and bants today that we need to, like, delve into more profoundly. But I think we can bring it to a close.
Yeah, we've got some good stuff off our chest.
Definitely.
Yeah. Lovely.
Take care. Bye.
Speak to you very soon.
Bye. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to the show to be sure you don't miss anything. Your hosts have been
Rosie Ellis,
Michaela Wilkins,
and Sue Peake Russell. French Renault Diaries Uncensored was produced and mixed by Katie Wright, and the music is by Grand Project.